We can all appreciate a beautifully landscaped yard or park, and it would be wonderful to bring that kind of beauty home. But designing a beautiful landscape can be a daunting task. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. It's Horticulture Day. Garden designer Lisa Orgler is also the assistant director of Ryman Gardens in Ames. She's here today with some simple steps that we can follow to design a beautiful home landscape. And Iowa State University Extension horticulturist Richard Giron will also be here. He and Lisa will answer your questions about your yard, your garden, and of course, your landscape. Join our conversation after the news. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. Good morning. I'm Charity Nebbe. It's Horticulture Day today. Beautifully landscaped yards and parks can be so inspiring, but bringing those ideas home can be a lot harder than it seems like they should be. We're going to start the hour today with tips on landscape design from Lisa Orgler. She is a lecturer in horticulture at Iowa State University. She's the assistant director of Ryman Gardens in Ames, and she blogs at lisaorgler.com. Hello, Lisa.
Hi, Charity. How are you?
Good. Thank you so much for being here today.
Thanks for having me.
And it does seem like it's incredibly difficult for a lot of us to see something beautiful. You look at a landscape and you think, I would love to replicate that at home. But somehow taking those ideas home is a lot harder than it seems like it should be.
Yeah. And there are some really simple things that we can do. But I do understand that if you don't know that area, it can be very overwhelming.
And you say that although you learned about landscape design when you were in college, you feel like you didn't really start your education until you actually were getting your hands dirty and doing it yourself?
Yes, exactly. And we were so excited when we bought our first house, and now we're on our second house. And really, that is the best way to learn, is by actually doing it.
All right. Well, let's talk about some of your general tips that can get all of us started on the right track.
Sure. I actually have quite a few tips, but we'll see. Hopefully some of these will resonate with the listeners out there. One of the things that I always try to encourage people to do is to mass plants rather than having one of everything. And I know I love plants and I love collecting all different kinds of plants. And when I go shopping, I like to just buy whatever's on sale. But it's really important that you try to mass plants. And what I mean by that is grouping probably more than three plants at a time, at least three to however many.
And so three of one kind of plant.
Of one kind of plant. Thank you so much. Yes, exactly. And one of the things I always suggest is, you know, a lot of us are plant bingers, where we go to a sale at, you know, a local nursery center and we see one plant, we're like, we have to have that. What I would always encourage you to do is try to buy at least three of that plant or more if you can, because it'll at least look like you were planning ahead and designing that space versus just having one of everything in your garden.
All right. And you keep using the number three, and that's another one of your tips, is to plant in odd numbers. Why?
So the second tip, of course, like you said, is planting in odd numbers. The reason for that is visually, if you were to have a group of four, for instance, visually, our minds like to separate groups. And when you have an odd number, your mind will, for some reason, instead of seeing the mass, you see two plants or four plants, or you see a group of two plants of two, instead of just seeing a mass. So it's really important that you have at least three. That rule actually breaks down after you get to 8 to 10 plants, because visually your mind can't break those plants in half anymore. So once you get to 8 to 10 plants, it's okay to go with even numbers also. But an odd number is always better if you're unsure.
And if you plant an odd number, does that sometimes alleviate some problems that you might have with perfectly spacing things, because your mind would group the three things together instead of thinking, oh, that one looks like it's farther over?
Yeah. Actually, that's a great way of looking at it. Yes, I would say yes to that. And one of the other things I want to mention is this comes up a lot in my studio classes, where if you put one plant on one side of your entry and one plant on the other, my students will say to me, well, you can't do that. That's two plants. But in reality, it's a group of one and a group of one, because they're not next to each other. So if that makes sense.
So if there's a sidewalk in between them, then
exactly.
Suddenly all bets are off.
Exactly. Now you have two groups of one. So I want to make sure I point that out, because a lot of people will say, but you've got one plant on either side of your walk, and that's two, but it really isn't.
All right. Okay. Well, let's get to tip number three then.
Okay, my next tip is in planting design, there's actually three words you need to consider, and that's form, texture, and color, which are actually tips 3, 4, and 5. But for 3, that's plant form. And I like to tell people that there is an order of hierarchy. So you always need to consider plant form first, then plant texture, and then color. And we always tend to go towards color first. And color is the most fleeting in a garden. It's not going to be there all the time. So it's really important when you design that you think about, especially the form first. And we'll talk about texture here in a second.
And when you're saying form, you're talking about the shape of the plant.
Exactly. So if you were to look at the plant head on, it would be the outline, the silhouette of that plant. So some plants have a pyramidal form. Some are columnar. Some are round. Some are irregular. Some are vase-shaped. And when you make you can make a composition of plants actually by thinking about what those shapes look like next to each other. And it's nice to have a variety, but you want to have some repetition too, and going back to that massing idea.
All right. And you have to use your imagination a little bit with that, because of course the plant that you buy at the garden center isn't going to be the same form that it will be when it grows.
Exactly. Exactly. So you do need to understand that a little bit. One of the tricks I love to tell homeowners is take a photograph of the front of their house or whatever area they want to design, throw some tracing paper over it, and start drawing forms, plant forms. So you don't necessarily know the plants yet, but you start organizing the plant forms in front of your house and see what that looks like. You know, you can make sure you don't cover windows. You accent your front entry. You do some layering. You want to have more than one row of plants. You have some taller ones in the back and shorter ones towards the front. And that's a great way to start designing in front of your landscape or in front of with a photograph, is using these plant forms.
All right. So now you mentioned texture.
Right. Texture was probably the most difficult thing for me to learn in college, and I don't think I even understood that until I started working. And actually, Ryman Gardens was the place that I learned that the best, because the designers there are amazing. And basically what texture is combining different leaf sizes. So a coarse textured plant has a large leaf, like a hosta or a lamb's ear, and then a small or a fine textured plant would be a small leaf, like grasses or... I'm trying to think of some plants off the top, like a sedum, like a really tiny creeping sedum. And when you mix fine, medium, and coarse textured plants, that makes your garden much more interesting than if you ignore that. So for instance, in my garden, I actually put a lot of emphasis on form and texture in my garden, because I know I'm not going to have color all the time. And even though I've been tweaking it for about 4 years now, it's actually starting to look pretty good. But it's really important that you do mix those textures, because it really makes your garden pop when you do that.
All right. And now color, which, of course, as you mentioned, is, I think, the thing that a lot of people think of first.
Yes.
So we will have color. It may only last for a little while, but as we choose those colors, what should we think about?
So color, obviously, is probably the most fun to think about. And one of the ways that I encourage plant choices is to limit your color choices. So maybe a client or a homeowner may decide they really love pink. And by limiting your choices of color, or pink and white, it really helps you decide on what plants to choose. Or maybe you go with a scheme like complementary colors, which would be opposite on the color wheel, like orange and blue or purple and yellow. And if you limit yourself by those choices, it really just helps you narrow down your focus, and again, helps you choose plants a little easier if you can narrow down that focus.
All right. Now, what's the next step?
The next step is cut off on my sheet.
All right. Height. Let's talk
about
plant heights.
Oh, there you go. Thank you. Consider all plant heights. yes, consider all plant heights. So people are really good about this. We're all good about this in terms of, you know, having large plants and then having some medium plants in the front. But the plants that I really want to stress are the really small plants in the front. I have a border along my front walk, and one of the neatest areas is the area right next to the sidewalk. I pick a lot of plants that are only 6 inches tall or 12 inches tall. And to me, that's like the trim of the garden. And it's just a really neat, beautiful thing to do. And a lot of people skip that trim, those really small plants. But I can tell you this, that only works well when you have your plants next to a hardscape element, like a sidewalk or a patio. If those plants are creeping into your lawn, then you're going to have maintenance issues, because when you're mowing, you might mow them off.
Right, so at least put in a border or something like that to
Exactly.
Creative.
Exactly.
Vibe.
But yeah, I would definitely consider those shorter, smaller plants. Those are fun.
All right. And here's something that, most of us don't think about when we're buying plants, because it's spring and we're excited and things are green. But you want us to think about what everything's going to look like in the wintertime.
Correct. Correct. So, yes, the winter interest is really important. I would always encourage you to mix perennials and woody plant materials as much as you can. If you have a lot of perennials, try to think of perennials like ornamental grasses are a great plant that would keep their form in the wintertime. And there might be other perennials too, like some of the ones with really cool seed heads like coneflowers and those types of plants also. Now, my husband likes to cut everything down in the fall, and I don't get the joy.
I was just going to ask about that. Yeah.
I don't get the joy of always having all these wonderful perennials up all winter, but I do mix in woody plant materials, so he can't cut those down. So I do have, by mixing, and mixing evergreens and deciduous also. You know, some people either like really, they like a lot of evergreens or they like a lot of deciduous plants, and try to mix the two together, because it is beautiful to have woody plants that don't have leaves, but it's even neater if you can mix in some evergreens with them.
All right. And next, let's talk about filling up those beds. And I think that can be part of the daunting task for a lot of us, because plants are expensive and you're making decisions and it's kind of an incremental process. But you say fill it up.
Exactly. So if you're going to create a bed, I'm not saying you have to create a planting bed, but if you do create one, fill it up with plants. I mean, I can tell you firsthand, I have a large border in my front yard. It's probably about 50 feet long. And the more that it has filled in over the years, the easier it has been to maintain. There are less weeds. It looks more beautiful. And if you're going to put all the time and energy into creating a bed and putting mulch in it, do you want to look at an empty bed, or would you rather look at something that's full and lush and just beautiful? So I would always encourage you, if you're going to have a bed, to make sure you actually fill it with plants, so you can enjoy that. And as they fill in over the years, you're going to have a lot less weeds to worry about.
All right. And we're almost to the break. So let's talk about 9 and 10 quickly here.
Okay. Sounds good.
Layering your plants is another idea.
Exactly. So layering plants means by making sure you have several rows of plants. A lot of us tend to just put one row of plants along the foundation of our house. But I would encourage you to have those planting beds much wider. Maybe, you know, depending on the height of your house, if you have a two-story house, you can go out 5 to 10 feet if you want, if you have the space, and then layer the plants, tall in the back, short in the front, like I'd mentioned before. I just think it looks more wonderful and lush, and it looks more in scale with your house also.
Gives it some depth. Probably acts as a rain garden as well, I would guess.
It could, yeah.
And then if you have a long border to fill, create a pattern.
Correct. So some of us have really long driveways or a long sidewalk, and we're not really sure what to do with the plants along that. So maybe you just pick several plants, and then you create a pattern with it, and then you keep repeating that pattern over and over again.
All right. And your final tip is experiment and have fun. If something doesn't work, try something new. So
exactly.
We will talk more in just a moment. I'm talking with garden designer Lisa Orgler. She's also the assistant director of Ryman Gardens. We put up a link to her blog on our Facebook page. It's lisaorgler.com, and you can find all of these tips and some wonderful illustrations at that link as well. We'll continue our conversation in a moment. This is Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. It's Horticulture Day today. We've been talking about landscape design so far this hour, and you are welcome to join our conversation with your questions about your landscape or your garden or your yard or any of the plants in your life. The number to call is 866-780-9100, 866-780-9100. You can tweet us at IPR Talk. You can also send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. Lisa Orgler is here. She is a garden designer, and she teaches landscape design at Iowa State University. She also blogs at lisaorgler.com, so you can find the tips that we've been talking about so far this hour on her blog. And Richard Giron is also here today, Iowa State University Extension horticulturist. Hello, Richard.
Good morning.
Thank you for being here today. We had spring last week, and then we struggled through another week of not.
Well, we had spring on Friday. Mm-hmm. We had summer on Saturday. We had spring on Sunday.
And then winter on Monday.
Winter on Monday,
yep.
Yes.
What a lovely week. April in Iowa, always a beautiful, beautiful time. But that winter on Monday, now we had been talking about the fact that the later the spring, the less likely we're going to have damage from a hard frost. So
right.
That winter on Monday probably didn't do much damage?
Didn't do much damage, no. There were some perennials peeking out of the ground, but they can handle it, so they're fine. So the trees are starting to bud out, but they're still pretty tight, so they're fine too. So basically not much damage, no.
All right, that is good news. Before we move entirely on from landscape design, Lisa, you gave us some wonderful tips, but when you sit down to make a plan, do you have a favorite way to draw it out that might help people?
I do. One of the things I always encourage people to do is look at the space holistically first. So I actually don't think about the plans until I create the spaces first. So that's really important. So there's a difference between spatial design and planting design. And planting design is the second step. What I always encourage people to do is to think about, if they're looking at, let's just say they're looking at their entire backyard. I always encourage you to design, for instance, your lawn space first. So what do you want your lawn space to look like? Should it be an oval? Should it be a square? Should it be a kidney bean shape? And then your plants would reinforce that space. So your planting beds would then go on the outside of that space. And what we typically do is we plan our planting beds first, and then whatever is left over is the lawn. But I really want to encourage you to design your spaces first and then have the plants support those spaces, because landscape design is really about creating space. So hopefully that makes sense.
I think so. I still have a lot of big projects that I need to tackle, so I don't know that it makes me feel that much better. But all right, let's get to the phones. You can join us at 866-780-9100. Ben is on the line in Cedar Falls. Hi, Ben.
Hey there.
Hi, what's your question?
Yeah, I've got a friend who I do some landscaping for, and last spring, early summer, on the north side of their house, they had a big bed of ferns in deep shade that were thriving, and they ended up all dying basically overnight. When we got a bunch of rain that year, they flooded from that side of their house into the basement for the first time ever. So they really want to try to get something back there to soak up some of that water. I don't know if you can recommend any deep shade plants, or if you would even recommend trying ferns again there.
Well, I'm not sure why the ferns died. And as far as the plants absorbing a lot of water, they'll absorb some water, but that's not going to help a great deal. So as far as what will grow there, I would definitely look at ferns. Some of the common ones like ostrich fern, that's hard to kill. Some of the hostas would look great in the shade. So those two would be the main ones that I would look at.
All right. Thank you.
All right. Thanks a lot for your call, Ben. And let's do an email next. This is from Deborah. She says, here's my question. I planted kale, chard, etc. last Saturday, the day before torrential downpours. Nothing has come up. Did the rains drown out all my plants? Do you recommend not doing this in the future? Of course, you can't really control the torrential downpours. And in the backyard, we have... Oh, this is the second question. So let's talk about those seeds first.
Well, the seeds should be okay, hopefully.
If they didn't wash away.
Right. So if it's a fairly flat area, they should still be there. If they're on a slope and you had a lot of erosion, then maybe they washed away. But if it's flat, they should still be there.
Well, and it was pretty darn cold on Monday and Tuesday.
But that's okay. Yeah,
so
that's
does that
okay.
mean that the...
That's
the,
okay.
But things wouldn't probably have popped up.
Right. I wouldn't expect to see those until maybe early next week, possibly.
Okay. And the second question is, in the backyard, we have an overgrown forsythia bush and burning bush. What's the best time to prune them back?
What I would do on the so-called burning bush, I would go out there right now or this weekend before it leaves out, and I would cut it back by maybe a third or so. By that, I mean not giving it a haircut, but selectively removing branches, maybe entire branches or a branch back to the main branch, that type of thing, and cut it back by a third. On the forsythia, they're blooming right about now in central Iowa, so I would go out after they're done blooming and, again, maybe take out some of that old stuff, if you can, near the ground, and basically kind of rejuvenate the plant.
All right. Let's get back to the phones at 866-780-9100. Doug is on the line in the Quad Cities. Hi, Doug.
Hi there. I planted tomato seeds at my normal time for the year, but the late spring has got me a problem in that the tomatoes are getting large, and I don't think I can put them out when I normally do. If they get any larger, should I just hang on, or should I put them in a bigger pot? They're in these little pea pot things.
Okay, how big are they? How tall?
Well, the ones I planted at normal time are about 5 inches tall.
They're okay. I would probably just leave them in those pots, make sure they get plenty of light. Mm-hmm. Are they in a window or underneath?
They're under grow lights.
Okay, keep them there. Keep on the lights for, let's say, 14 hours or so per day.
Uh-huh.
And then about a week before you intend to plant them, bring them outside and put them in complete shade for a day or two, and then gradually expose them to longer periods of sunlight.
Uh-huh.
And after about a week, they should be ready to go.
What's the maximum height I should allow them to get before I plant them?
Well, that's not a problem because even if they're tall, you can dig a deep hole and plant them deep because tomatoes are one of those rare plants that have the ability to root on that buried stem, so they'll be perfectly fine.
Oh, okay, great, thanks.
All right, Doug, thanks a lot for your call. Next up, another email. This is from Nikki. I have a question about plantings. My driveway is lined by my neighbor's arborvitae trees. I have 2 to 3 feet where I can plant something. What type of plants would work best next to those?
Oh, 2 to 3 feet. You could put in perennials or annuals, depending on how much sunlight it gets. For example, I'm thinking as far as perennials, things like, for example, daylilies would be nice. You could have a row of those, and I would look at some of the repeat blooming varieties that bloom for basically 10, 11, 12 weeks. That would be a possibility. You could put in some annuals like petunias, marigolds, zinnias. So a number of different things would fit.
And she's concerned about the acidity of the evergreen mulch?
Not a factor, no. No, the soil pH is something that changes very, very slowly, very grudgingly. And so those few pine needles or whatever, they're not going to change the pH appreciably. So that's not an issue. So the main issue would be basically what kind of plant do you want, annual, perennial, and how much sunlight light does it receive as far as the area.
All right. We have a couple of lines open for your calls right now at 866-780-9100. You can also tweet us at IPR Talk or send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. Jim is on the line in Spencer. Hey, Jim.
Hey, yeah, I lost an ancient patch of ferns last winter, too, and I think they froze. There was no moisture in the ground to protect the roots, and there was a couple of, you know, new ones that managed and survived, but it's going to take a few years to get it back to where it was. I planned on keeping the same type of fern, and I imagine it's just something that's, you know, local to the area, was dropped by birds, kind of volunteer style.
All right, and so you think it's the combination of drought with a frigid winter?
Yeah, we had really no moisture last winter in the ground. It was just like sand out there, and there was a number of things that froze for us that way, and I'm pretty sure that's what happened to my ferns, but I'm feeling comfortable if I just let them come back that they should be good for another 100 years like they were last time. So,
all right.
I just was going to mention that.
All right, Jim, thanks a lot for your call.
Yeah, ferns, basically, when you think of a fern, you think of a shady, damp, moist location. And the last two summers have been awfully, awfully dry. That's not what they like. And so that may have been a big factor in maybe their decline.
We saw quite a bit of damage that became apparent last spring after a very dry summer, followed by the winter. Are you expecting to see some things crop up in the next couple of months, Richard?
Well, the thing that we are seeing quite a bit of is the winter burn on some of the evergreens, like the yews and arborvitae.
And we saw that last year, too. So whatever didn't get it last year.
And I think it was a combination of things that we had a dry summer, and that made them more susceptible to winter burn. And then we had this long, brutal winter, and that caused the winter burn to be much more widespread this spring for that reason.
All right. You can join our conversation at 866-780-9100. It's Horticulture Day. And with me, Iowa State University Extension horticulturist Richard Duran and landscape designer Lisa Orgler is also here. So if you have any specific landscape questions, feel free to give us a call or questions about any of the plants in your life. Joe is on the line next from the road. Hi, Joe.
Good morning to everyone. I have a large rose bush that sends out runners, and it kind of climbs and creeps. And it's got about, I would say, a 4-foot diameter with a 12, 14-foot circumference. I want to cut that back, when should I do that? And simultaneously with cutting it back, do I need to fertilize it? I'll take my answer off air. Thank you.
All right. Thanks, Joe.
I would cut it back now. Cut out what you don't basically want if it spreads. And as far as fertilization, you can fertilize now also. I would just use a all-purpose garden fertilizer, like a 10-10-10. Maybe, let's say, a third of a cup per plant.
All right. And let's go next to Bruce in Des Moines. Hi, Bruce.
Good morning. I have problems with my berries. It seems like my blackberries have all died this year. And I have raspberries close to it. I was told not to do raspberries close to them. The raspberries have never done well, and I'm getting ready to plant blueberries. And was going to plant them next to the blackberries. So I'm trying to figure out just what to do with all my berries.
Well, we have a hard time growing blackberries in Iowa because they're not as cold hardy as the raspberries. Mm. And after a cold winter, they'll typically die back to the ground. And if they do, they're not going to bear fruit because they bear fruit on the previous year's growth. So if I was going to plant blackberries, I would plant these new varieties that bloom the first, they bear fruit the first year in late summer, early fall. And those are things like Prime Jim, Prime Jan, and Prime Arc 45. They will bear the first year in late summer, early fall. They don't have to survive the winter as far as the canes don't. So you basically just cut them back to the ground each winter, and they bear fruit in late summer, early fall. As far as the blueberries, the main thing there is they need an acid soil. We don't have acid soils in Iowa, so you have to acidify the soil. And so what I would recommend is digging a very wide hole, but fairly shallow, and taking half the soil and then mixing that with sphagnum peat moss, which is very acidic. So it's basically 50% soil, 50% peat. Backfill with that, and you lower the pH.
Can I put blackberries next to raspberries?
Well, the concern there is certain plants, certain types tend to be
10 feet away.
Well, you can. Make sure that you buy plants from a reputable company, because the main concern about planting some of the raspberries and blackberries next to each other is that certain types may be more susceptible to disease. And if one of those types gets infested, then it may spread it to the other types, which normally don't get it. So the main thing there is, if you're going to do it at home, make sure that you buy plants from a garden center. Don't take plants from an old patch, because oftentimes they are diseased.
All right, Bruce, thanks a lot for your call. Next up, Susan in Cedar Falls. Hello, Susan.
Hello, good morning. I was calling to see what your recommendations are about using mulch in a garden bed. If you recommend it, how thick should it be?
I would definitely use it because it's a really nice weed control measure. It also conserves moisture, so it's actually very beneficial. It kind of depends upon the site. I tend to use things that break down quickly in a vegetable garden. Things like shredded leaves, grass clippings, straw. Because I get the benefit of the mulch, but by fall there's basically not much left. Okay?
Okay.
And what's left I can actually till into the garden as organic matter. I would tend to use longer lasting things in my perennial beds and around trees and shrubs. So I would tend to use things like wood chips, shredded bark. And as far as the depth, the woody material is typically 2 or 3 inches. In the garden, it can be maybe up to 3 to 4 inches.
All right, Susan, thanks a lot for your call. And next, let's go to Caroline in Cedar Rapids. Hi, Caroline.
Hello.
Hi, what's your question?
Good morning. I would like to ask, I have rock beds around my house now, and I like the beds, but I don't like the rock. So I'm wondering if I have to pull all of that rock and all of that black plastic material out, or can I just build a raised bed over the top of it and go forward?
I would remove the rock, I'm afraid.
That does sound like fun.
I know it's work, but I would remove the rock and the plastic, or if you have a landscape fabric. For me, rock is simply not a very desirable mulch because it does embed itself into the soil, and once it does that, it's very hard to remove. But I would remove it and go from there.
Okay, thank you.
All right. Thanks a lot for your call, Caroline. And next, let's try to see if we can squeeze in one more call. This is Sue from Des Moines. Hi, Sue.
Hi. I have, actually, this is my husband's question. He read about giant hogweed that's been found in Michigan, and he said it causes welts, scars, and can lead to blindness, and it grows as high as 10 feet tall. He wants to know if we've seen it, if it's coming here, or is that an urban myth?
I think I've heard of that, too. I'm not sure if it's present in Iowa at this point. We do have some nasty invasive plants, but I'm not sure about that one.
All right. Well, we'll keep an eye on it. I did see articles about that last year as well, Sue. So we'll try to find out more information about that maybe for a future show. We're going to take a short break. We'll be back to answer more of your questions in a moment. And you can join the conversation at 866-780-9100. You can tweet us at IPR Talk. You can send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. It's Horticulture Day. And with me today, horticulturists Richard Duran and Lisa Orgler from Iowa State University. This is Talk of Iowa. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. It's Horticulture Day today. With me, Iowa State University Extension horticulturist Richard Duran and landscape designer Lisa Orgler. She also teaches landscape design at Iowa State University, and she blogs at lisaorgler.com. So if you're looking for some of the tips we were talking about earlier in the hour, you can find them there. You can also find a link to her blog on our Facebook page, Iowa Public Radio. And of course, you can join the conversation with your questions at 866-780-9100. 866-780-9100. Tweet us at IPR Talk or send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. John is on the line next from Washington. Hi, John.
Good morning. I have a yard. The front yard of my house faces north by the compass, and I have a glorious maple tree, shallow rooted.
Mm-hmm.
Give me a ground cover that I can put under this maple tree, because I've got the tree and dirt,
I
face north.
That's difficult because maples are very shallow rooted. Their root system is massive. And because of that, smaller plants have a very difficult time surviving around them. So, as far as what you could try maybe creeping lily turf, which is a grass-like perennial. It's pretty aggressive in its own right, and so you might try that.
Can you say that again slower? Creeping lily turf?
Right, creeping lily turf.
Okay, I did get
creeping
it right.
Lily turf. The genus name is Lariope, or Lariope. And it's a grass-like plant. It's a pretty aggressive plant. Another possibility would be yellow archangel, which is another ground cover, pretty aggressive also. You could try that. So I'm looking at more ground covers. Maybe Lily of the Valley would be another possibility. Again, very aggressive, pretty aggressive plant. So maybe some of those, maybe they're tough enough to kind of deal with the maple tree. But it is a very difficult environment. It is.
And Lisa, I heard you agreeing with Lily of the Valley, I think. Did you have anything else you wanted to toss in there?
Well, the only one I can think of, and I don't know if this is such a common plant, but would vinca do well in that
situation? Yeah, you could try that.
I don't know if it would or not, but
might
with
be
the, with the blue flowers in the spring. Yeah,
mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mulch would work too, right?
Yes.
Yes, it would. I would think possibly mulching with wood chips. It's better than, you know, just bare ground. And maybe around the perimeter, you could put maybe some hostas or something to make it look nice.
All right, John, good luck with that project. Thanks a lot for your call. Let's get a couple emails out of the way here. This is from Matt. He says, I know that I should prune oaks during the winter, but I forgot to prune a sucker from it this winter. Can I do that now or should I wait till next winter?
I would get my house paint out and open that and prune it off. And as soon as you're done pruning it off, paint it with a latex house paint.
Okay. And that'll keep?
That'll keep the insects away.
All right. And this one's from Elaine in Story City. We purchased a house with spirea at its foundation or as its foundation plantings in front. I don't like spirea. Is there an easy way to remove them? To complicate matters, one is close to our gas meter, so I worry about digging them out.
Well, I would try digging them out. You can definitely do it. I'm assuming it's one of those smaller types, so I would try digging it out. If you don't want to do that, you could cut it back to the ground, and then as soon as it started to resprout, spray the sprouts with Roundup or Cleanup.
All right. And is this one of those situations where you could, instead of digging, hook up a chain to the back of your pickup and pull them out?
That would be even more, I think, potentially damaging.
Okay. Just checking. That's always fun.
It's a possibility, but with a gas meter nearby, right. I wouldn't do that.
Try to look for the fun solutions, too. All right. Doug is on the line next. All right, Doug sent this email from North Liberty. He said, I have a large bed of fern leaf peonies. I would like to move some of them. What's the best time of year to do that, and can they be divided?
You definitely can divide them. Don't make the divisions too small, but I would divide them basically probably late August or September. At that point, they're kind of dying back, but that's when you want to do it. Dig up the entire clump, take a sharp knife and divide it. Look for buds on that clump, and you want to leave at least 3 or 4 buds per clump, and then replant as soon as possible.
All right, and what kind of location do you want when you replant?
Basically, at least 6 hours of direct sun, at least.
And he also has a bunch of green dragon plants he wants to share with friends. When is the best time to transplant those?
Green dragon, that doesn't ring a bell with me, so I'm not sure.
All right. Let's go back to the phones. Hayes is on the line in Jefferson. Hi, Hayes.
Good morning.
Hi, what's your question?
I'm a Kansas farm boy transplant, and Kansas has for years irrigated their cropland and people have watered their lawns. And I noticed the last couple of summers up here in Iowa being so hot and dry, not a lot of irrigation, but a lot of people watering their lawns. In Kansas, they're having to talk about, stopping that or severely restricting it in order to conserve water for drinking. I would be interested in your guests' opinions on if they think that that is gradually going to happen here in Iowa with a changing climate or if our wetter seasons up here will always keep us out of that situation.
Okay, well, my background is not meteorology, so I'm not going to go there. But as far as turf grasses, we basically grow bluegrass. And bluegrass can tolerate drought. It basically will go dormant, and it can stay dormant for several weeks and then green back up when it rains. So we don't really have to water, but some people choose to do so. But we don't typically have to. So if you have a bluegrass lawn, and it gets dry, typically you can let it go dormant, and it will survive for several weeks, basically, in that state.
All right. Hayes, thanks a lot for your call. Jan is on the line next in Iowa City. Hi, Jan.
Hi. Good morning. Good morning, both of you. I'm wondering about the mulching of vegetable gardens. Can I use my oak leaves for that, or do they decompose too slowly?
No, you can use oak leaves.
Awesome.
I would shred them so they stay in place. But you could use oak leaves.
Okay.
Absolutely.
Great. Thank you so much.
All right. Thanks a lot for your call.
Blessed Easter and Passover.
Thanks a lot for your call, Jan.
Bye-bye.
And Jack is on the line next from Ames. Hi, Jack.
Good morning. I have sort of a landscaping question. We're thinking of building a new garage, and yet we have a stand of cedar trees. They're about 40 years old, about 25 feet tall. How close could we get to those without damaging their roots?
Well, you're going to damage their roots. Typically, you want to stay beyond their drip line. Okay.
Well, these are kind of tall and upright trees, so they don't have that big a drip line.
Right.
Is it, Is it really true that a tall columnar cedar kind of tree doesn't have that big a drip line?
Well, the roots are quite shallow. Most tree roots are found in the upper 12 inches of the soil. A few go down maybe 18 inches. So they're actually quite shallow, but they go out quite a distance from the actual tree itself. So they may be out maybe 30, 40 feet from the tree very easily. And so typically when you do any type of construction, you're going to be cutting off a certain percentage. The key would be you want to keep that percentage as low as possible. And if you do, you'll be fine. So we typically would say probably definitely beyond the drip line. Definitely beyond the drip line. And as far away as you can. But once you get into the drip line, then you're cutting off quite a large percentage. And, and that could lead to some fairly serious consequences, especially if we have a hot, dry summer. Because now you have this plant that has a much smaller root system. So one thing you possibly could do would be if you go ahead and do this, and then we have a hot, dry summer, try to go ahead and water those trees if you can periodically so they can cope with the dry weather.
Okay. So I'll try to stay like 5 feet or so back from the drip line as best I can and hope for the best.
Okay.
All right, Jack, thanks a lot for your call. Next up, let's go to Jerry in Waterloo. Hi, Jerry. Jerry, are you there? All right. I think Jerry has gone elsewhere. Nancy is on the line in Altoona. Hi, Nancy.
Good morning. I hope everyone is well there.
Yeah. What's your question?
Well, the house that we are in now, landscaping was done previously, and I'm wanting to redesign what they've done. The biggest issue that I have right now is they used a lot of kind of medium to large river rock along the walkway in front and other places around the house, but particularly along the walk in front of the house, there's about a foot and a half of river rock, and anything that's been planted there has not survived well. I'm not sure whether it's because it ends up with some salt from salting the walk in the winter, or whether that rock is just too hot and maybe plants aren't surviving along there because of that. So I'm wondering, should I go ahead and invest the time in taking the river rock out and just mulching around plants, or should I try a different strategy to accent that walkway?
Well, that's a personal preference, but I would prefer, my suggestion would be to remove the river rock. And I would also want to see, is there something beneath the river rock? Do they have like plastic or something else which may be affecting the plants? But I would be inclined to remove the river rock and replace it with something more favorable for the plants, like wood chip, shredded bark. You have to replace that periodically, but it's a much better environment for the plants.
Okay. Thank you. That helps.
All right. We need to arrange some sort of an exchange program so the people who take out the rock can give it to the people who are going to go buy all the rock this year. And
right. They might want to have the rock for maybe a stream or something.
Right.
So.
All right. Jerry is back now from Waterloo. Hi, Jerry.
Hi.
What's your question?
I have two blue arrow junipers. What's the best way to trim those?
Okay. Those are junipers?
Yes.
Okay. Well, you can prune them right now. The key point about pruning junipers, all the growth, the green foliage, is out toward the outer part of the canopy. And if you look directly inside, it's basically bare. Okay. So when you prune junipers, you can prune a portion of that green growth, a portion, but always leave some green there. So let's say there's growth on the outer foot of the plant. You can prune it back by maybe 4 or 6 inches, but always leave some green there. If you go beyond the green into the bare spots, they never fill back in. So make sure it's kind of a light pruning.
Okay. Now, would you recommend using an electric trimmer or a manual trimmer?
I would use a hand shear so that and do some selective pruning where it doesn't look like a haircut, because to me that's rather artificial. So I would use like a pruning shears and make individual cuts.
All right, Jerry, thanks a lot for your call. We have this question from Twitter from Kelsey. I've heard that to get rid of weeds in your yard, you can use salt. Is that true?
Yes and no. There are some weeds that will be destroyed by salt, but also some good plants don't like salt either. So salt is not a very good herbicide. We don't recommend it. We think that basically cultivating, hand-pulling mulches are the best way to go.
All right. Sam is on the line from Muscatine, our last call of the day. Hi, Sam.
Hi there. Yeah. So I have a lilac bush that's at our old house where we no longer live, and I just wanted to transplant some of the shoots to where we live now. I was wondering if it's a good time of year for that, how I would go about doing that.
Right. Most lilacs do sucker, and because they do, you can dig those up and move them. So I would do it as soon as possible, and I would try to dig up the little sucker with some roots on it, and then replant it immediately and keep it well watered. And if you do that, there's a pretty good chance it will survive.
All right. Thank you very much.
All right. Thanks a lot for your call. And a couple emails to slip in here. Wendy says, I've left my winter interest perennials up, and I'm hesitant to cut them down and clean up the leaf litter just yet in case of insect, moth, or butterfly larvae that may have overwintered there and are yet to hatch. Is that a concern?
I think it's more important to get rid of that plant debris as far as disease control and things like that. So I would be inclined to probably do that as soon as possible.
All right. Doug from North Liberty wants to know where you stand on rubber versus woody mulch.
I see the rubber mulches, and I think they never break down. So I tend to avoid them.
All right.
For that reason. They would be suitable for a playground where, you know, you have that cushioning.
Right.
But for a landscape, I think I would go with wood chips, more natural things.
All right. And Lee says, my knockout roses are about 3 feet tall. Can I trim them back now? And how much should I cut off? Also, I've not cut back all of my perennial grasses yet to keep the winter interest. Should I do that this weekend? Sounds like yes on the second question.
Yes. As far as the roses, I would imagine there's quite a bit of winter damage. And so if there is, prune out all the dead wood. And the dead wood will be brown to blackish in color. Prune back to the live green canes.
All right. And I think our final question of the day, David in Ottumwa says, I have a front yard, south-facing garden space that gets direct sun for most or all of the day, and a north side backyard with some tree cover. And I'm interested in edible landscaping to fill the spaces. We already pot tomatoes, green peppers, and jalapenos, but are planning on adding onions and potatoes in the back and possibly herbs as a ground cover in the front with all that sunshine. Do you have any other suggestions or words of wisdom?
Well, in the front where you have all the sun, you might plant some edible shrubs, like blueberries, for example, which would be nice. They're kind of attractive in their own right. You might also plant a cherry tree. They're also very attractive, nice fruit. So those would be possibilities.
All right. Well, Richard Geron, thank you so much.
You're welcome.
Iowa State University Extension horticulturist Richard Geron. Lisa Orgler, thank you.
Thank you, Charity.
Come back again soon.
Yes.
Lisa Orgler is a lecturer in horticulture at Iowa State University. She teaches landscape design. She also blogs about landscape design at lisaorgler.com. We'll be back with Horticulture Day next Friday. Ben Kiefer is here with me in the studio now. What's coming up on River to River today, Ben?
Hi, Charity. Today I'll be talking with Charletta Suddeth of Waterloo. She says her years of prayers have been answered this week. Her father will be released on parole. Her father, Raspberry Williams, has spent nearly 40 years behind bars for a 1974 murder. Also, we'll talk about that Racing and Gaming Commission no to the Cedar Rapids Casino proposal. Many other things, including Des Moines native Jordan Bookie in the Shark Tank tonight, Charity.
All right. News Buzz coming up at noon on River to River. I'm Charity Nebbe. This is Talk of Iowa.